This is the Mahabharata Podcast, episode 42, Kidnapped. Last episode was mostly about Duryodhana's reaction to being humiliated by his defeat and rescue after the cattle expedition. There was a whole scene involving the demonic forces giving a pep talk to their golden boy. In terms of PR, Duryodhana's next move was to hold a Vaishnava sacrifice. All the kings and Brahmins were invited and feasted, but still some wags thought it was funny watching their so-called warrior king walking behind a plow with a team of farting oxen, thigh-deep in shit and fertilizer. Was this a Vaishnava ritual, or just a Vaishya working a plow? Karna, always trying to reassure his patron, was forced to raise the stakes some more. This time he swore an oath not to wash his feet until Arjun was dead. This oath was probably a bad idea, because much later, when the great war is raging at Kurukshetra, and Karna is in command of all the forces, he'll have some trouble with his charioteer. Perhaps the smelly feet had something to do with it. Following Karna's oath of the dirty feet, the scene changes back to the Pandavas in the forest. The brothers are still staying on the shore of Lake Dvaitavana, where the 11th year of exile passed. Soon after, Yudhishthira had a dream. In his dream, a contingent of sobbing deer bowed before him and said that they were the last remnant of the wildlife in this area, and they would soon be extinct if the Pandavas and their followers stayed much longer. They begged Yudhishthira to move his camp elsewhere. Yudhishthira readily agreed to their supplication, and the next morning they broke camp and moved to the Kanyaka woods near Kurukshetra. Perhaps because the time for hiding was drawing near, Vyasa came by to visit the Pandavas early in their 12th year. He wept when he saw how the years had taken their toll on his grandchildren. As you might expect, Vyasa then treated them to a philosophical sermon on their suffering. He said, "One never finds happiness without having suffered. Joy and sorrow must be experienced sequentially. That is the way it works for humanity. A man of vision realizes that luck comes and goes, and he neither celebrates nor mourns." Yudhishthira just loved talking about this kind of stuff, and he had a question ready. He asked, "We are told that austerities and generosity are the best way to earn spiritual merit, but which one is the best?" Vyasa answered, "Nothing on earth is more difficult than giving, because wealth is acquired only by great hardship. Men must go into battle, risk their lives, and suffer to win great wealth, and so to give that up is very difficult. Indeed, it is the greatest of austerities to part with one's honestly won fortune. Even the smallest gift, when given at the right place and time, can have endless rewards in the hereafter. Take, for example, the story of Mudgala." As we've seen throughout the Book of the Forest, Yudhishthira loved stories, so he begged for the complete story of Mudgala and the Cup of Rice. The story begins with an ascetic who lived off the rice he could find in the fields after the harvest was done. Despite this meager food source, Mudgala managed to feed himself and his wife and still observe sacrifices to the gods, giving them a share of his poor diet. In addition, Mudgala never turned away his guests, no matter how many. There happened to be one of these naked sadhus in the area, named Durvasas. This guy heard of Mudgala's generosity, and, acting like a madman, he came to visit him. Naked and hurling abuses, Durvasas told Mudgala he was hungry. Mudgala took the insults in stride and welcomed his guest with water and what was left of his rice. The madman ate what was offered and demanded more. Mudgala gave his own portion to Durvasas, which he ate, smearing the remains on his face and neck. The lunatic then wandered off, his stomach full and his benefactor starving. The same thing happened the next day. Mudgala spent the morning hunting for fallen rice grains, only to have this naked madman show up at mealtime and eat up all he had. This continued for a total of 6 days, but Mudgala's equanimity was unchanged. Neither happy nor irritated, he fed his obnoxious guest everything he had and then went hungry. Finally, Durvasas shed his disguise and praised Mudgala for his generosity and equanimity. He said, "Congratulations, you have won yourself an express ticket to heaven. Plus, you get to keep your body. This is a great honor." As Durvasas was saying this, a trumpet fanfare blew and a heavenly chariot glided down to pick him up. Mudgala looked admiringly at the chariot and enjoyed the fragrance of the flowers raining down from the sky, but he did not move. Addressing the charioteer, who had just arrived from heaven, Mudgala asked, "Tell me, what is heaven like, really? I'd like to know both the good and the bad." The charioteer obligingly answered him, starting with the high points. He said, "The roads are all well maintained, and everyone gets around with one of these cars. All the liars, louts, and sinners are barred entry. Only the good guys are let in. There is no hunger or thirst or discomfort of any kind. There is no disease nor injustice. No sorrow, no old age. The beauty of your body is born from your past deeds, not from your mother and father. The biggest downside to heaven would have to be the fact that nothing lasts forever. You may have earned yourself an extended stay, but inevitably your time will run out and you'll find yourself back here, a hungry, bald ape harassed by a madman. Durvasis, no longer crazy, was astonished to see Mudgala hesitate before the gates of heaven. But Mudgala had one more surprise. He said, "Thanks, but no thanks. Heaven sounds pretty cool and all, but I'm looking for something a bit more permanent. I'm tired of all these ups and downs, and now I'm ready to check out for good." Thus, Mudgala turned down his chance to heaven and resumed his marginal existence until he finally breathed his last. At that point, he won his desire, total extinction. Vyasa concluded his tale, linking it back to his grandson's situation. He said, "Therefore, child, do not let your grief take hold of you. Just let it pass, knowing that all things must pass, both the good and the bad." Surprisingly, this seems to be the entire purpose of Vyasa's visit, because following this story, he took leave of the Pandavas and returned to his own forest ashram. Like Krishna's visit before the cattle expedition, if Vyasa knew what was going to happen next, he certainly didn't give any prior warning. And, after his departure, the brothers went back to their usual hunting forays, with all five out in the woods all day, while Draupadi stayed at the camp with their priest, Damya. On one of those days, the king of Sindhu, named Jayadratha, rode by the encampment. Jayadratha was actually just passing through on his way to the land of the Shalvas, where he hoped to arrange a marriage for himself. As he drove by the camp, he caught a glimpse of Draupadi standing in the doorway. The king was astonished to see such a beauty living out in obscurity. At first, he suspected she must be a supernatural beauty. Jayadratha summoned one of his toadies to find out more about this woman. He was thinking that perhaps he could skip going to Shalva, since there was a perfectly good, or even better, wife just sitting here in the jungle. The courtier cleverly addressed Draupadi in verse. Using poetic form, he lauded her beauty and questioned her background, using lots of highfalutin references to the Vedas and Puranas. Draupadi answered them, saying, "I know that a woman like me should not even reply, but there is no one else to speak for me, because I am here alone. I know you are Jayadratha of Sindhu, and this courtier is the son of Saratha, a prince named Kotakashya." She continued, "I am King Drupad's daughter, whom the common people call Krishna. I have chosen five men to be my husbands, whom you know. My husbands have left briefly on a hunt and shall be back soon. You are welcome to stay here to wait for them. I am sure they would be happy to see you." If I had sound effects, you'd hear scary violin music in the background about right now. Draupadi let the two men have a seat and gave them food and drink. Jayadratha confided to his friend that all other women were like monkeys compared to their hostess. He then spoke to Draupadi. He said, "You've been a fine host, but why not come with me now? Jump on my chariot and you can sleep in a palace this very night. Forget about these Pandavas. You married kings, but they're kings no longer. Consider your marriage annulled and come with me." This was too much for Draupadi, and, expecting the return of her husbands at any moment, subjected her guests to a lengthy tongue-lashing. She threatened them with what her husbands and Krishna would do to him if he tried anything funny. Jayadratha soon tired of the conversation, grabbed the princess and dragged her to his chariot. Finally, Damya heard the ruckus and came on the scene as Jayadratha was carrying Draupadi to his chariot. Ever the good lawyer, Damya said, "Wait a minute, this isn't right. You're supposed to first vanquish her husbands before carrying her off. Don't you know the rules?" These raiders had no interest in arguing with the priest, so they ignored him and rode off, back to their kingdom. Helplessly, Damya followed behind, citing laws and uttering curses. Meanwhile, the Pandavas found themselves inexplicably disinterested in hunting. They felt an emptiness in their hearts and could only think of returning to the camp. When they got there, they found Draupadi's serving girl weeping and cursing the kidnappers. Briefly, she told them what had happened and who had taken her. Not wasting a moment, the five set off after them, tracking them through the woods. Jayadratha had come in a chariot, but he also had a small bodyguard of foot soldiers and archers, so they moved slowly and left lots of footprints on their trail. The brothers soon caught up with them, and the first person they encountered was Damya. The priest pointed excitedly down the road and yelled, "Get them! Attack!" Telling the priest to calm down, the five warriors surged ahead, yelling battle cries so fierce that it stunned the foot soldiers. Draupadi took notice and happily started enumerating her heroic husbands and detailed the kinds of retaliation Jayadratha should expect. The king didn't have long to find out the truth. because the five brothers had already engaged with his bodyguards and were leaving a trail of headless bodies and bodiless heads as they went. Draupadi continued taunting her captor as he watched his buddy Kodakasya pummeled to death by Bhima. That was enough for Jayadratha. His charioteer was shot through with arrows, so the king released Draupadi, kicked the corpse aside, and raced off, thinking only of escape. Draupadi was pretty toughened up after these years of hard living, so she just dusted herself off and urged Bhima and Arjun to race ahead and finish him off. As they each jumped in their chariots, Yudhishthira called to them to bring the malefactor back alive. Bhima had no choice but to obey, but he contented himself with the knowledge that Jayadratha will wish himself dead by the time they got back to Yudhishthira. Before they started forward, Arjun notched four arrows to his bow, closed his eyes, took a deep breath, and released the arrows. The four arrows soared ahead of them, and each razor-headed shaft killed one of Jayadratha's horses. Now, in utter terror, the king ran on foot into the woods and cringed behind a rock, hoping he would not be discovered. Bhima was an expert tracker, however, and he easily found his quarry. Arjun called out from behind not to kill him, and Bhima commenced beating him. Kicking and punching, he made sure Jayadratha did not lose consciousness. Finally, he bound him up and carried him back to the chariot, where Bhima used a crescent arrowhead to shave Jayadratha's head, leaving just five tufts on his battered scalp. Meanwhile, Yudhishthira, Draupadi, and the twins returned to the camp, where they found everything in disarray. Markandeya and the Brahmins had all fled into the woods. As soon as order returned to the camp, Bhima and Arjun arrived with their captive. They all had a good laugh at his appearance, but then Yudhishthira ordered Bhima to release him. Bhima objected, but Yudhishthira explained that their aunt Gandhari was from Sindh and was related to this scoundrel. He said, "We owe it to her to spare him his life." Draupadi chimed in, "Set the king's slave free. You have shaved his head down to the five tufts." When Jayadratha was released, he bowed to Yudhishthira and the Brahmins in confusion. Yudhishthira said to him, "Go a free man, but never do it again. A curse on you, vile lecher." Then, feeling compassion for this wretch, he said, "May your spirit adhere to Dharma and never turn to lawlessness. Go in peace." Jayadratha was not nearly so forgiving, and, not wanting to return home with this appearance, he remained in the wilderness, worshipping Shiva and performing austerities. Eventually, he earned a favor from the great god. Jayadratha asked, "May I vanquish all five Pandavas in their chariots?" Shiva replied, "Hold on there. You aren't going to get that much out of me. I'll give you the power to repulse their attacks except for Arjun. Even the gods have a hard time against him." You can file this story away because it will come up again when we get to the battle books. That's all for now. Next time, Yudhishthira will seek out Markandeya for solace, and we will get another batch of stories from the famous wise man. Thanks for listening.